Welcome to episode 80. We're finding ourselves in a time where women are hearing more about their pelvic anatomy and educating themselves with the goal to enhance their long-term health. Pelvic organ prolapse is a term women hoped to not hear in association with their name. I get it. Pelvic organ prolapse sounds scary, and it can be easy to jump to the conclusion that your body is failing you, that you need to either hold tight with all your muscles so that nothing falls out, or give in and have surgery. If the stress of prolapse is on your mind, I'm really glad you're joining my guest and I today. Dr. Alexandra Dubinskaya is a Beverly Hills-based urogynecologist who practices with an emphasis on female sexual health, pelvic medicine, reconstructive surgery, and menopause. You'll hear in our discussion her passion for educating and empowering her patients. Today, we're going to cover what exactly is prolapse, symptoms most commonly experienced, options other than surgery, for example, pessaries and physiotherapy, what makes someone a surgical candidate, types of surgical repair and what the recovery may look like, the mesh controversy, and considerations for living with prolapse. Many people have prolapse without symptoms, and many people with symptoms are okay living with them. The goal here is to educate, to diffuse fear, and to help you understand your options. You are unique and not the same as everyone else listening to this. We hope this episode lifts a little weight off your shoulders, relaxes your pelvic floor a bit, and gives you the permission to dance around your house, even if you have prolapse. I'll be right back with Dr. Alexandra Dubinskaya. Before we get going, I know many of you listeners are also physiotherapists because you have reached out, curious about recommendations for pelvic health courses. So I want to take time to ensure you know about the Cheerful Academy, created by two highly skilled and experienced physiotherapists. Anakin Chadwick and Trish Gibson have teamed up to offer an online training and mentorship platform for physios looking to feel more capable and confident in their practice. Their signature offering is the Pelvic Health Fundamentals course. It's designed for physios who have taken the internal courses, but feel they have some gaps in their knowledge or tend to feel stuck with how to apply what they've learned once they get into the treatment room. The course is designed not to overwhelm you with information, but rather to help you get clear and make your next day in clinic easier. So if you're looking to build your clinical competence and confidence in pelvic health, then this is something I would recommend. The next cohort kicks off in January 2024. Follow the link in the show notes to take advantage of $150 off before December 15th. Hey listeners, have you ever heard of using a compression garment after a pelvic surgery? Did you know that there are other countries where this is much more common practice, that women are being informed about the benefits of compression after surgeries like hysterectomy, prolapse repair, and C-section, from the time they leave the hospital and even before? For this reason, I've been liaising with SRC Health, an Australian-based company, to learn how we can start implementing this practice in not only my community of Kelowna, but in North America in general. I'm grateful to have SRC Health as this episode's sponsor, and I want to take time to tell you about their high-quality products. Using a revolutionary fabric created by medical professionals, SRC has designed a line of compression shorts and leggings that are made to support the tummy, back, and pelvis in pregnancy, or help you feel less pain and more confident with movement as you recover after pelvic surgery or birth. To check out their full line, head to their website, www.srchealth.com, and enter the code THEPELVICFLOORPROJECT, all capital letters, at checkout for 10% off. Doesn't your body deserve the support at such a time of transition? Okay, Dr. Alexandra Dubinskaya, I'm so appreciative of you today because it's really hard to ask sometimes people of their time because I know you're a busy woman. You have lots to do. And I really can't thank you enough for taking the time to share this information for the benefit of people listening. I know you're located down in on the West Coast, but in the US, in Beverly Hills, and you are a board certified gynecologist. specializing in urogynecology. We're going to be talking today a bit about reconstructive surgery, but you also, you know, specialize in the area of female pelvic medicine, sexual health, and menopause. And so you have a lot of things that people come to see you for. And I really wanted to talk today about prolapse and specifically surgical intervention. So before we get going, because this is going to be a hot topic for sure, I'd love for you to share a little bit more about yourself. You know, what do you want listeners to know about you?
So it's my pleasure and honor to be on your podcast. And as you mentioned, I'm a board certified gynecologist specializing in urogynecology. So I basically treat conditions like urinary leakage, pelvic organ prolapse, urinary tract infection, pelvic floor dysfunction, vulvar skin conditions, and female sexual dysfunction, including painful sex, low libido, orgasmic disorders. To get where I am right now, I went through a fairly long training. I completed my medical school and general surgery residency in St. Petersburg in Russia. And then my passion to the field of women's health, along to the pelvic surgical reconstruction and female sexuality, led me to the United States, where I completed OBGYN residency, became a board certified gynecologist. And then my surgical skills were refined further at the fellowship in female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgeries at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. And I'm actually now opening my private practice in Beverly Hills. But I always try to extend my involvement in the field past the office. So I've been active in research and have presented my work at different conferences, published in multiple peer-reviewed journals, and actually contributed to the textbooks on urogynecology and colorectal surgery. I also serve as the chair of the communication committee for the International Society of Sexual Medicine. And the main goal of our committee is actually promotion of sexual literacy through the society's website, newsletters, and social media. And overall, my life goal is to inspire and encourage women to embrace their bodies, their sexuality, and regain control of their life. So I'm very fortunate to speak about pelvic organ prolapse with you today.
Yeah, I've been really thankful. I really resonate with when you say that you make a point to do some work outside of the office, because I find, like, even though both you and I know, like, we don't get paid to do this podcast episode, and you know, we don't need to say yes to this stuff, but I find this stuff is what fuels me. Like, I find just connecting with other people and helping to provide some information to people, like, you, this is such taboo topics that we cover. And I think it's important. I think this is a huge amount of information coming towards women lately. And I think it's great. So, and I've noticed that on your social media account, you do such a great job of taking the fear out of some of these topics and sharing the information in a way that doesn't feel so intimidating or embarrassing. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Now, before we get going, will you share, how did you hear about this podcast? Because, you know, at one point when you reached out, I thought, how did she hear about little old me in Western Canada? I would love to for you to share that.
Yeah, it's interesting because one of the days I was operating and I heard like a surgical tech and circulator was talking about this podcast and how much it gave them information, how much it inspired them. And I'm like, huh, it must be very powerful podcast and tool that women actually listen, think through, and it gives them power to like discuss them and discuss their conditions, and they don't feel that alone. So I really wanted to reach out to you and talk about all these taboo topics. And I think because pelvic organ prolapse is not like a normal topic to talk during like cocktail hours, people usually don't volunteer that. And not only patients, but also a lot of other providers don't actually know what happens behind like a closed doors of urogynecologists. So I think this is a great opportunity to shine some light on what is exactly this condition, what can be done, and kind of help women to see this bigger picture, because then you can pick and choose which route would work for you personally. So I think this is great, and I'm really glad and grateful that those nurses actually like was talking, and I heard them, and I reached out to you. So I'm super happy to be here.
And, you know, the topic of prolapse, or the term prolapse, I think is definitely pathologized. I mean, I think in the past, people used to always think of the term prolapse as being synonymous with surgery. That's what I think a lot of women thought is, oh my gosh, if you have prolapse, you need surgery. And I mean, that's what we're going to talk about today. But I find that comparing the vagina or the private parts to something like a knee always helps people understand it more. And I always say, well, no, wait a minute. If you had knee symptoms like knee swelling or knee pain, you don't go straight to, I need to have a knee surgery, or you don't right away think you need to go see an orthopedic surgeon. I think everybody knows that, you know, all of that treatment lives on a continuum for the knee, and they understand that some knee conditions need surgery. But we don't go there right away. Our thinking doesn't go straight to a surgery. But I think in the past, prolapse as a term has left people thinking they need surgery. And we are going to talk about surgery for prolapse today, but understanding that it lives on a spectrum, and we'll make sure we cover, you know, talk about some of the things that come before the some of the conservative management options that come before surgical management. But can we start with something as simple as, how do you describe prolapse? So when one of your patients has heard the term, or maybe you want to bring it up to them, how do you describe it to them?
So basically, pelvic organ prolapse is the hernia. Same way how like men, women has a hernia around the belly button. The pelvic organ prolapse is the same hernia, but the organ is kind of like sliding through the vagina. So you can treat that surgically, or you can treat it conservatively. And the good thing is, if there is no symptoms and you have a little hernia, you don't really need to do anything about it. So, if you have a symptoms, then it's time to see someone. For example, like most common symptoms that would bring women to like see gynecologist or urogynecologist is having like a vaginal fullness, or feeling like something stuck inside of the vagina, or the feeling of like stretching and like heavy sensation that actually not that bad in the morning, but as a day progresses, it gets worse because we usually walking around, the gravity doing its job, and the hernia gets bigger. And basically ligaments has more work to do. So women feel more symptoms of pelvic organ prolapse closer to the nighttime. And also like some women who has a little bit more advanced stages of the prolapse, they actually will notice like a new organ coming out of the vagina, and then that would bring them to the doctor. Said that, I see a lot of women who has zero symptoms, but they saw the gynecologist or primary care, and the doctor did exam and told woman, by the way, you know, your bladder is falling. You need to see your gynecologist. So they come to me, and yes, their bladder falling a little bit, but if they don't have a symptoms, you don't really need to do anything, because majority of women, especially women who ever been pregnant or give birth, they would have some degree of prolapse. But most important thing to keep in mind, if you have a symptoms or not. So if you don't have symptoms, we don't need to do anything about it.
Sometimes I'm an analogies person, or I'm a very visual person. And sometimes I use the analogy of gray hair. I say, similar to if you called me up and I couldn't see you and we were on the phone, and if you said, I'm a 60-year-old woman, I could finish your sentence with, and you have some gray hair. right? And same as if you say to me, I've had a vaginal birth, I could finish that sentence with, and you have some degree of prolapse. You can't.
Absolutely.
And I use the vision I bring in, you might find this helpful. I bring in toilet paper rolls to the clinic, mm-hmm. like once the toilet paper's gone off of it, because I feel like it makes a good vagina. And show them that I say, like, do you think you could push a baby out of this tube and not have some element of permanent stretch, you know? And so this is how the organs beside will start to kind of creep into this tissue or push into this tissue because it has some stretch. And I think sometimes just explaining that that doesn't mean you're broken. Just like I would never say something's wrong with your head if you have some gray hair. It's I think sometimes our brain is left to the imagination and people picture everything's just going to fall right out of your pelvis, right?
Yes, yeah. Totally. Yes.
So how would you say, so you mentioned some of the most common symptoms, you know, kind of like a heaviness, a pressure, something's in there, maybe a harder time evacuating my poo or my pee. Pressure, I think I said. What, but also too, sometimes people just with a mirror looking, I'm sure you see this a lot. People will look with a mirror and say, something's there, you know, and I think sometimes it's they've never looked before and they don't know what they're looking at. Can you talk a little bit about that? You know, some of the things that women might see down there when they look that are normal changes that maybe they just haven't seen before.
Yeah, it's actually brings up even a bigger topic of what's normal.
Yes.
Because we can always compare like how high to the height of other people, right? And we don't need to go far. We can just like go to the mall and see it. But it's quite difficult to compare your like look of genital region to other people, like how it's compared to your friends, to your neighbors. And sometimes people go to like a porn website, let's say, to like see what's like how the organs look like. And it's not always pictured like a realistic appearance of genital area, especially with the changes of age, of pregnancy. It's all different. Same as like you have changes in your face, you get more wrinkles, you get some pigmentation. Same happens down there. So yes, it's good. I think it's good for women to look with a mirror to know like how your part of the body looks. But when you do it for the first time, when you're hitting menopause or start having some new symptoms, it can terrify you even more. And I'm actually happy with women when women come in and that's the main complaint, because we can actually look together and we can compare to any like new, which would be like normal appearance of the genital area and kind of discuss what's normal, what's expected. And quite often the seeing something doesn't mean that it's actually functionally abnormal, which is also just explaining can treat that, and women can be totally reassured and not bothered by that at all.
I think that's so important. I think that we sometimes feel embarrassed to ask, or we don't even know what to ask, but I think that's perfectly appropriate to ask your care provider. Like, can you explain to me what this is? Because I agree. I think just spending that time to show this is what this is, this doesn't mean anything's wrong with you. You might always have this. You don't ever look at anyone else's unless this is your job, right? So I think right. It's easy for the brain to make up stories. Our healthcare system in Canada is obviously different than yours. So what would happen in Canada if someone was having some of these symptoms is probably they would go to their family doctor. And then their family doctor may, depending on the symptoms, decide to refer them to a gynecologist. We have urologists and we have gynecologists in my community. We don't have any urogynecologists here, mm-hmm. but other communities do. And they might wait up to a year to get in to see a specialist here. What happens down where you are? Can people self-refer to you, or how, if someone wants to see you, what does that look like?
Similar. Well, there's different different paths for people to find urogynecologist. Primary care doctor can refer gynecologist, usually like a general gynecologist. They're not specialized in pelvic reconstruction or urogynecology. So they would refer someone to urogynecology. So depending on insurance, you need that referral or you can self-refer, just call and make appointment. The wait time is different depending on how busy physician, where the physician practicing from. I would say the average wait time between like calling to make appointment and actually being seen, it's about like 3 months. It can be like you can be put on a cancellation list and get like seen sooner. You just can't predict when it happens. So even though there is not too many urogynecologists, like we all busy and there are plenty of patients for everyone. But what's I think happening and changing is we have more and more pelvic floor physical therapists. So I see more and more women actually seeing a pelvic PT before seeing urogynecologist. And it's actually helps because they kind of already did the first step. So now when they still come in to see me, they know, okay, this conservative method didn't work for me. So I still need to do something else. So I think in some ways it's actually expedites the process.
Well, don't you think about that similar to, again, if we go back to the knee, if you're having knee pain or knee swelling, you wouldn't get sent straight to an orthopedic surgeon. Generally, your family doctor would say, they would start the conservative management options. Like maybe I'm going to send you to a physio. And then we are trained as physios to know what's outside of our scope of practice. Right. Mm-hmm. And same with in the area of the private parts. I mean, I can look at someone's symptoms. I know what's in my wheelhouse as far as conservative management goes. And I can help someone know when they need to move ahead of me, you know, like I know what's in, you know, my scope and what I can't help. And I think that needs to be done more often, that people start with the conservative management options, because it's not necessarily either or, right? Even if that person did need a surgery, I'm still going to help them with more strength, coordination, you know, activity tolerance, that kind of thing, which is a completely different thing than what's in your scope of practice, right? And so,
of course, yes. And I think one of the important things that pelvic floor physical therapists do, they actually get to spend more time with the patient and actually sometimes, unfortunately, like hear better what exactly bothered the patient. Because it might be not the bulge that they see, but actually like functionality and help with the functional part. And a lot, like quite frequently, some women might have like prolapse of the rectum where it's pushing inside of the vagina because of the chronic constipation or the way how they have the bowel movements. And it's all habits. So I think pelvic floor PT really good at breaking those habits and actually help women to poop right, which is a blessing actually. And it's actually will help down the road, even the woman will elect to have a surgery, you still need to break that cycle and change your old habits to do the things differently so you can get a different result.
Yeah. And I think that kind of pushes us nicely into kind of what I wanted to ask you next is about conservative management options. And I think, I mean, that's something that physiotherapy would be a conservative management option, where that's exactly what I would do is I would say, okay, what's bothering you? What are your symptoms? What do you need to do? What are your symptoms now? And what are your goals? Are you trying to play soccer? Do you have kids that you can't lift up? I had one lady one time that was, let's say mid 60s. And she said, I can't lift my groceries because of my symptoms. But I'm not a surgical candidate. So I just get my husband to lift them. And I said, well, that's great that you have a great husband, but I don't mean to play devil's advocate, but what happens if your husband hurts himself? Who's going to lift your groceries? And so I think a lot of what we do is, yeah, help people troubleshoot, you know, what are your symptoms and how can I help you find a way to do what you need to do in your day? And I do think that we there's just an misinformation out there about what we actually do, because I think it's assumed that all we do is teach Kegels, which is essentially like tightening the pelvic floor over and over again. And similar to the knee, I would never just say you flex your knee over and over again if you can't play soccer. And so I think of prolapse as a pressure issue. And so I'm going to help you. What do we need? Do we need more strength from the bottom, or do we need less pressure down? Because maybe it's how you're lifting the bag of groceries. Do you hold your breath and brace and send pressure down? Maybe we just need to breathe out and send pressure up instead of down. Do you activate your abdominals a bit too much, which create a downward movement? I wonder if I could help you figure out a way to use your muscles in a more coordinated way, because it's not just about strengthening the bottom, but maybe offloading the bottom, or maybe your whole body just needs to be stronger so your pelvic floor is not taking so much pressure. It's never the same, but thinking about like if you were to go ahead and operate on someone, but they haven't changed their habits or haven't changed their muscle coordination, I wonder if they'd be someone that needs a revision. You know, like, I don't know that for sure, but I think that's one thing that I'm hearing a lot from the local surgeons is, well, we do want you to try physio before we do an operation, because I don't want to reoperate on you again. And so let's make sure that we exhaust some of that. I did a whole episode. Episode 16 was with another physiotherapist, Janice Mitchell, about what we offer as physios when it comes to prolapse. And I'm curious for you and then Alexandra to also talk about what else, if someone's coming in to see you with some of these symptoms, you know, physiotherapy might be in your back pocket as something you suggest. What other things are you going to present to them as options before you start thinking about booking a surgery for them?
Yeah. Well, I think in general, the conversation for me with the patient starts with, what is your goal? Because it would be different if somebody showing up and saying, you know what, I'm sick and tired. I don't want to do anything. I want to have a surgery and I want to move on with my life. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any issues with that. We'll talk about conservative options. But if that's what woman wants and that's what fits her lifestyle, we'll do that. If woman showing up and she's not sure where she stands and it kind of bothers, but not bother her enough to have a surgery, then we can do several things. I mean, we can observe and do nothing. That's an option. And I think it's very important for women to know that prolapse does not put you in a medical danger, but it puts your quality of life in danger. So we're talking about quality of life. So I would add vaginal estrogen, because it's common that the prolapse usually happens in like 50s, 60s, 70s, where there is a low amount of estrogen is decreased. So actually giving back those estrogen vaginally can help women with the discomfort and some irritation that they have. Especially if there is an advanced prolapse, meaning like you can see the organ actually coming out of the vagina, and it's the underwear, the clothes can irritate that organ. And it's very important to apply the vaginal estrogen to keep the tissue healthy. So that would be an important addition to maintain just the health and the quality of tissue. Pelvic floor physical therapy is helpful, but it's very important to set the right expectations. Physical therapy will help with the perception of the symptoms, but it's not gonna put your organs back together. And the same way how you brought up the analogy with the knee, one of my mentors always used to say, if you break your ACL, you can do all the therapy in the world, but it's not going to put that ligament back together. And it's true for the prolapse as well. So if you have a minor prolapse or want to try that option, it's totally normal and fine to go and do pelvic floor physical therapy, because it can help you with the symptoms. The next step, a little more invasive, is to try the pessary. And pessary is the device that has been out for many centuries, and Actually, I was recording my social media today, and I actually ha happen to have the pessaries at home, so I can actually show them. So it's a simple silicone made medical grade silicone made device, and when it's placed in the vagina, it supports the organs, and it can be different shape. It can have a little knob on the pessary that actually helps women who has a stress urinary incontinence, leakage with physical activity or coughing and laughing. It also compresses the urethra, so it kind of addresses both pelvic organ prolapse and stress urinary incontinence. And it also could be the pessary for more advanced stages of prolapse that's a little bigger, and they work by creating the suction behind the base, and keeps the organs up. So it's very important to emphasize for women that it will help with the symptoms. It's not going to put your anatomy back together. So some younger women like a pessary for physical activity, and they can put it in the vagina, take it out, wash it themselves, manage it, and it can they can manage their prolapse for long period of time with the pessary. It's also a good option for older women who doesn't want to have a surgery or a poor surgical candidate. And quite often women ask me, what's the risk of having the pessary for so long? There is not too many risks other than some irritation, erosion, and there is just like some rare, extremely rare cases of vaginal cancer just because of the chronic irritation with a foreign body. But again, it's a extremely happens extremely rare. So pessary is still a good option. The thing to kind of keep in mind that whenever you put a foreign body in the vagina start doing what it's can do the best, create the discharge. And that discharge can be very irritating for some women. It definitely has a different smell, and some women more sensitive to that more than others. And when you use the pessary, it's important to also use vaginal estrogen because, again, you want to make sure that the vaginal tissue is healthy, and if there is any irritation happens, it heals. So from pessary, we can move to a more invasive option, meaning surgery. And when we talk about surgery, it's important to discuss what exactly is sliding down the vagina. Is it only like isolated organ, like a bladder, or is it rectum that protruding through the vagina, or is it just a uterus? Or several organs can kind of slide down the vagina. So if it's isolated organ, it could be a small procedure that done vaginally takes about half an hour to perform. You go home the same day and recovery is very quick. So more extensive discussion happens when there is more than one organ is prolapsing, or if the top of the vagina or uterus is prolapsing, which means you do need to address the top portion of the vagina. And when we do that surgery, it can be done through the vagina or through the stomach. In both cases, we attach this top of the vagina, cervix, or uterus, depending if woman has a hysterectomy before, or we need to do it at the time of the correction of the prolapse. We attach that part to one of the ligaments. And the most important difference is what supports that top part. Are we using your own tissue as when we do the vaginal repair, or do we use a more durable synthetic material to attach it to the ligament when we do the surgery through the stomach? And I think that's where the most of the discussion, controversy, anxiety happens. Because the moment I say the word mesh, it's usually room fills with silence. And I know what the patient thinking about, patient knows what I'm thinking about. And it's usually brings up to the conversation about mesh. And
can I ask you something? Can I ask you really just to like come home to something you said about it's everybody has a different goal. I want to figure out what their goal is, because I'm picturing the person that's maybe coming in to see you. And I think that's what the beauty of this podcast is for people to listen and think before they come see someone like yourself, because otherwise this information I think can feel overwhelming to people. They've never heard of a pessary. They've, like you said, they've only heard of mesh and thought of danger. You know, they've never thought of physio before. So I think it's so helpful for people to just go in and think, but also knowing that no two people are the same. I mean, you're going to look at the person in front of you, listen to their symptoms, and you're going to present them with options. And I'm sure you have all the time. Some people are like, I'm not going to a physiotherapist. I don't have the coverage. I don't have the money. That might be one barrier. Other people are like, I am not putting a foreign object in my vagina. So I am not considering a pessary. Or like you said, there's some people that are not surgical candidates, right? That for whatever comorbidities or that's just a preference of theirs. But I really do think that people, with all of this information that's out right now, people think there's black and white answers, like that I'm going to go and my friend had this surgery, so I'm going to have this surgery, or my neighbor has a pessary, so I'm going to have a pessary. But I think one of the main things that we're trying to kind of tease out of this so far is that everybody's so individual and that there's options. And so now if someone, maybe their symptoms are so significant that nothing conservative is going to help them, or like you said, they're just choosing, I would like to have a surgery, then from there you're going to decide, depending on what tissues are prolapsing, plus what needs to be supported and what's there, you're going to talk to them about options. Is that, am I up to speed on that? Yes. Okay.
Yes. Absolutely. And again, if it's isolated organ, it's, and a woman would like to have a surgery, it's pretty straightforward.
Meaning that you would normally, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Sorry.
No. Yeah.
When you say it's straightforward, like if it's one organ or isolated prolapse, would you think you're using their native tissue? Like I'm sure it's not that black and white, but would most often when you say like isolated prolapse that you think that you could use their own tissue because it's not as big a surgery?
So yes. So when, let's say I should probably get more specific. So
that's,
we know
okay. Yeah.
What we're talking about. So when I say isolated prolapse, meaning like, let's say only bladder prolapsing, and prolapse of the bladder, another name for this is cystocele. So let's say only bladder is prolapsing and the prolapse is not significant enough that like other organs kind of coming down as well, then we will 100% use the native tissue. And the way how we do that surgery, just to show how, I don't want to say like minor, but it's kind of minor compared to what else we do, where we basically, patient goes to sleep, we make a small incision in the vagina, we find that those ligaments that separated due to the childbirth, life, constipation, just quality of tissue, and we literally put them back together. We close the skin over it and you go home.
Sew it.
Yes. So same happens if, let's say, there is only isolated rectum, like bowel, pushing towards the vagina, or another name for it is rectocele. We would make a small incision on the kind of posterior side of the vagina, find the separated ligaments, put them back together, sew them together, put the skin back together. That's it. You go home. When we talk about anything involving the top part of the vagina, that can be just vagina itself, cervix or uterus, that's where it gets a little bit more complex, because we need to support that top part in order for everything stay up. And that part, that support can be done through the vagina or through the stomach. And that's where in order to decide which approach will work best for a particular patient, we have to take into consideration general health, age, what activity patient doing, what are they planning to do in the next 10, 20 years. So there are a lot of discussion involved in that. The reason being, why are we discussing it so much? Like, give me the best surgery. And a lot of people, they actually come in with that. Like, I want to have the best surgery. The reason being is when you do surgery through the vagina, you usually use a native tissue when you address this top of the vagina. And when you do surgery through the stomach, you use the synthetic material. And there are two schools of thoughts. One school of thought says, you know what, you have a prolapse. Let's first use your native tissue. Let's do repair. If your prolapse recur, at that time, we will use mesh. And another school of thought says, okay, you have a prolapse. So it means that your tissue is already not really durable and good. So why would we use your tissue that's already failed? Let's go and use the mesh that's gonna be a good support for your prolapse. Similar how general surgeons repair a hernia. They often use mesh because they know if there is a hernia, the tissue is not good and to start with. So basically, when we bring up a discussion about mesh, we talk about the gold standard surgery, which called sacrocolpopexy. What it means? It means we take a piece of the mesh and we attach it to the top of the vagina or cervix, and we attach another part to the ligament on your back. And it provides about 95% success rate at 10 years, which is pretty good. When we talk about vaginal surgeries and vaginal repairs, we use your native tissue, and the success rate is about 65 to 75%. So it doesn't mean it's a bad surgery. It just different surgery fits to different, like different people needs different surgery. If you're very active, 55 years old, who is exercising, whose life expectancy is another 40 years, who has a still like young little kids, you probably will be better served with abdominal surgery using mesh, because you can get more use of that surgery. And if you're 85, you don't really do too much of activity, but the prolapse bothers you and you want to do something that will take less time, you okay that it might not last you for many, many years, but you want to use your own tissue and have a vaginal surgery with a quicker recovery, then vaginal surgery will be for you. So it's all about conversation and preferences and expectations.
Absolutely. And I think of, like, I can't help to think about, I mean, I'm biased because I am a physiotherapist, but I think of, like, for example, going back to the example of the ACL. When it's torn, no amount of physiotherapy is going to repair the ACL. But there are people that choose not to have an ACL reconstruction. You can still have a functioning knee. You just have to make sure that your muscles and everything around there can make up for, you know, what, like, can compensate for the ACL. And this is where some people will choose not to have surgery because they can still work with their body and have a functioning body. But I think about the person that does have the ACL reconstruction, and I think of how, like, the surgeon will do a great job of repairing that, but the repair itself won't change the function of the muscles. Like, it won't strengthen the muscles or change the behavior of the knee. If that person has developed a limp, for example, because of the knee problem, the surgery itself won't make the limp go back to normal. Like, that's rehabilitation or kind of working through things. And so I think of that and think of the people that are like, I want the best surgery. Absolutely. The things that you use, like the products you use, the techniques you use will make a difference, but what you do with that body and how you exercise with it and how you lift things and how you poop and all that stuff will also play into the success rate, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I think that, again, I think it's just hard for people sometimes to be able to think big picture because we're not used to thinking about rehab when it comes to our private parts. But there are so many similarities between other parts of the body and surgeries we have in other parts of the body, and outcomes are better when we have a rehab focus too, right?
100%.
Yeah. So will you talk a little bit about, one of the things I want to ask about then are who's not a surgical candidate? So let's say someone comes in and, you know, they're bothered by their symptoms and they want to do something. Who might you say we have to stick with some of the conservative management options here? I just don't think you're a candidate.
You know, we actually very rarely say that, because there is this one particular type of the surgery that done very quickly. It's actually can be done under regional anesthesia, but it's usually reserved for women who quite mature, who has a lot of comorbidities, and who is not planning to have a penetrative vaginal intercourse in the future. So why is that important? Because we're literally closing the vagina. Like, outside, the genitalia will look totally normal. Nobody gonna know like that surgery you had, but inside, the vagina actually becomes like 2-3 centimeters deep. But the way how we close everything and support everything, women won't have the symptoms of the prolapse, and so that way her quality of life can improve. So that's the surgery that we can reserve for those who's not really a surgical candidate. Because, like, I mean, again, this surgery takes also about 30 minutes to do. And with regional anesthesia, a little bit of like optimization, this can be done. Another controversial cases where some urogynecologists would do repair and some would not, is women of childbearing age. And we see more and more women actually come to us with pelvic organ prolapse even before they had kids. The women, for example, who has a Ehlers-Danlos syndrome or just connective tissue disorders that haven't been really fully discovered, but they just very flexible and they have all the issues with constipation and they basically like push every day so much. They do have a prolapse. And sometimes we have to operate on a girl who is like 19, 20 years old just to bring the anatomy back in. And not everyone would do that because the concern is if the woman will get pregnant, it's basically gonna ruin the repair. That's one concern. Another concern is, can she get pregnant at all, or is our surgery will impact her fertility? Or if she will become pregnant, how would you deliver her? Like, is it C-section or vaginal birth? So there's a lot of questions that we don't really have good data supported answers. But what we have been doing in our practice is we've been offering treatment to those women. But instead of using the synthetic material, we would use the biologic graft. And we do know that biologic graft won't hold as long as the synthetic material. So girls, they know that at some point they will need to have another surgery to repair this the prolapse, but at least it will give them some time to have like a normal anatomy, to go live their life, get pregnant. And there are some cases that show that women actually got pregnant and had successful pregnancy after repair. And in this kind of the same group of controversies, the women who like between kids, it used to be that doctors would not operate on women if she's not swearing that she's done having kids, or on a condition that I'll do your surgery, but I'm also going to remove your fallopian tube so you cannot get pregnant. So it's still out there, and I can't say it's like right or wrong. Everyone has a different like train of thoughts and beliefs. In my practice and how I've been trained, if the prolapse bothered you enough that you're so miserable that you want to have surgery, let us give you this surgery. Let us give you good quality of life. And when you get pregnant, we'll figure out it at that time. And if we need to do another surgery, we'll do another surgery and we'll discuss it with women. And again, if despite all of it, women still want to have a better lifestyle, like who we are to tell her no.
Case by case basis.
Exactly.
Here, when you say biologic or biological graft, what does that mean? Or because is that's like animal tissue, isn't it? Or what is that?
Yeah. So it's basically like the cadaveric fascia.
From a human?
Yes.
Yeah, from a human. And so how do you sometimes use that? Would that be the only time in some of those short-term examples that you're using that? Because would you say that it's not as strong as native tissue? Well, I guess it depends probably, but
it's not as strong as synthetic mesh material. So if you place it in someone, you know that it will be it will dissolve, body will reabsorb that material. Gotcha. So if you're already going for the most durable surgery, why would you kind of have do it and use the biologic graft? But again, it all depends on where you've been trained, because everyone, there is no ideal like pathways or protocols in urogynecology. It's all about what's like basically reasonable for this particular like institution program with people training.
Yeah. And I can't say that enough that, you know, same as what the echoing what I said before is that you need to talk to your surgeon. You need to ask about your center that you're going to be at, because, and even the country is going to be different. I'm sure there's so many unique people are going to be listening to this from who knows where, but you're not going to get the same answer from everybody you talk to. And I think this is just arming you with questions. So make sure that you go in and ask your care provider questions, right? Is probably the best thing that people can do on that. Will you go back to the mesh topic for a second? Because obviously, like you said, there are times where that's going to be, it sounds like the best option, but that is something that's creating a lot of fear right now. Will you highlight kind of why that fear is there? Because from what I understand, there were some misconceptions and maybe some misuse before, which doesn't make it all bad. But that's, I think, the bad gossip that everyone's taken away from it is that mesh is bad.
Yes, unfortunately. So basically, it's all started when those like mesh kits came in on the market. And what does it mean, mesh kits? It's basically different like pieces of mesh material, synthetic material, that already pre-made to be placed through the vagina to fix the pelvic organ prolapse. At that time, when those mesh kits came out, there is no separate urogynecology field. People was doing it, but it was not as common to have it like a specialty and the training programs. So anyone could buy those mesh kits and put it in. And same as like people who did like two procedures a year or like 100 procedures a year, they all could use those mesh kits, but obviously outcomes would be different. And also those mesh kits had pretty large pieces of mesh that they would put like underneath the like vaginal skin. And it's all about like dissection and layers and surgical techniques, how you place it. So a lot of women had a good outcomes when it was done by people who specialized in these conditions and do a lot of them. But there was also a lot of women who had a bad outcome, scarring, pain, And all of that prompt FDA to take those mesh kits off the market. So after 2016, when it all happened, all those mesh kits, like we can't find them anymore. And we, till this day, we're not allowed to use anything, like put any mesh through the vagina. But the mesh that we use for the gold standard procedure to support the pelvic organ prolapse, it's basically the same mesh that's been used for hernia repairs. And we put them through the stomach. So it means that we don't have as much of a risk to place it too superficial to the vaginal skin, or it's not associated with the same side effects and risks as it was with the vaginal mesh. Again, any mesh you use, it can always like go through the tissue. You can always see a little piece of that protruding through the vagina. But again, most of the cases, you literally just excise that piece, give women vaginal estrogen, and there is no sequela of it. So the mesh that we use right now is safe, and it's not the same mesh that women hear on TV. And often that mesh conversation goes to the conversation of sling. Sling, it's a small piece of mesh that we use to treat stress urinary incontinence, the leakage with physical activity. And when we place that sling, we do it through the vagina, and it's also mesh. So women often ask like, so how can you use sling if it's mesh and you place it through the vagina? But in that case, the point being that sling, it's literally like it's very small. It's about centimeter wide piece of a synthetic material, which does not have the same risk of erosion or protrusion from the tissue as those like large pieces of the mesh kits.
So as a general rule, like in kind of explaining to people or that they want to picture it, if your vagina is kind of like a tube or a cave, and one side of the cave is prolapsing a bit, so the neighboring tissue is kind of falling into the vagina, you can kind of reinforce the wall with their own tissue, like basically kind of like, I hate to dumb this down, but like sew up the stretched parts, right? And reinforce the wall just by tightening it up, essentially, correct?
Not fully. It's not the extra tissue that we're sewing up. The point when we do like a native tissue repair, it's not about the skin. It's about ligament, the fascia that underneath the skin. That's why we need to open the skin, find those pieces of separated fascia underneath and kind of placate it together and then close the skin.
Yeah. And reinforce it, essentially reinforce the walls. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whereas when it's a bigger area, usually needing to use help from a synthetic tissue to provide more stability or more, integrity, right? To help provide more integrity, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that a synthetic material is also kind of pretends to be the ligaments that initially supposed to support everything. And those ligaments overstretch. So now we have that synthetic material that actually like steps in and helps to keep everything up.
So let's say someone had kind of the more, simplistic repair versus a more complicated repair. Do you send them home with different post-op instructions or different guidelines for recovery? I'm curious to know some of the things people might consider when they go home after surgery.
Yeah, it's actually a great question. So for the minor procedures, everyone goes home the same day. You feel like groggy just because of the anesthesia, but you can walk around, you can take a stairs, you can take a shower, obviously nothing in the vagina, no bathtub. Women can be pretty active. active. And usually they just experience a little bit of like cramping, a little bit discomfort, but nothing major. Some spotting, some bleeding is normal. And also as the time passed by, the discharge, vaginal discharge can change. It can be a little yellowish. It can smell differently. You can start seeing how like some pieces of sutures, like on a toilet paper or on a toilet, it's all part of the normal recovery. We do want women to not lift anything heavy for about like 2 to 4 weeks. And even though you can start like a little exercising, going on a hike, doing some like a little weightlifting with your arms, but don't do anything like that feels like a sit-ups that increase that abdominal pressure. And sexual activity wise, basically about like 4 weeks with like no penetrative vaginal intercourse. But we always like, I would always see the patients before actually giving them a green light to make sure that everything is healed properly, because everyone has a different timing on a healing process.
And can I ask your thoughts on compression? Because this is a discussion that I've had before on the podcast, just around more and more information or evidence supporting compression for different things. And I did an episode with another physiotherapist that is involved with, let's say, post-C-section care. And we talked a lot about the benefits of compression garments after C-section. And I wonder then if you can speak a little bit about your thoughts on compression after something like the abdominal repair of prolapse. Would that be something that, and I'll just kind of go back and say that what we talked about in that episode was the benefits, the literature says the benefits are, you know, it helps with pain, it helps with mobility, it helps with comfort, it helps them fear that sensation of that incision opening up. And so makes me think that maybe after an abdominal repair of prolapse, that might be similar, and that if someone thinks that would be comfortable, I wonder your thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think after any abdominal surgery, having this compression helps with recovery, speed up the mobility. Obviously, it's more useful if it was open repair, like laparotomy, like incision, like after C-section. But it definitely helps with the laparoscopic surgery as well.
And then in the case of a vaginal repair, maybe different, because, you know, obviously a different approach, but at the end of the day, these garments are best for comfort. So would you have any reservations for someone that wants to wear it for comfort after vaginal repair of prolapse?
Yeah. So routinely, I don't usually like recommend or discuss the compression with patients who's having vaginal repair, but if it's what makes them feel better, more secure, there is no contraindication to it. I would be fully supportive.
And I even think that, and I know that there is some evidence, it's not the highest quality evidence, but even for people that are more on the conservative side, where they're not planning to have a surgery, that the compression can be helpful just for managing some of the symptoms. And I think of just one client I had the other day who was very clear she will not be having surgery just for some different medical concerns. But she was sent over by the gynecologist to help with symptom management. And I couldn't help but I recommended some of the compression garments for her. She has Parkinson's and struggles with balance and what she describes as rigidity in my pelvis. And so I just thought anything that would give her some support would be helpful in managing her symptoms, because she had no desire to have surgery. And so I just thought it would be something helpful to bring up as an option for people, whether they are non-surgical or surgical. But I think same thing as everything, have a discussion with your care provider about the pros and cons for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if it makes you feel better, again, more secure, I think there's nothing wrong with wearing compression.
And you would expect to see them, you'd expect to follow them once or twice after their surgery?
So usually it's like you see them like in a week, 10 days, just to make sure everything is looking good. And then it's 6 weeks. And it's 6 weeks, technically, you should clear everyone for like a general normal activities. Depends on the comfort. of the patient and your like preferences, you can just graduate them and say, okay, everything is fixed, go enjoy your life. And sometimes you just want to bring them back in a year and just make sure that everything is going well and nothing bothers them. But again, if you're living your life and nothing bothers you, why would you want to go and see a doctor again? So it depends on the preference of the patient.
And I always say too, to think of people, just, I say, sometimes just think of, you know, when trying to decide whether you want to see a physio or not, I would always consider, like, is this person wheelchair bound versus a high level soccer player or high level runner? Like, the demands of your body are very unique to you. And like, if you, after a, I mean, go back to my knee surgery example, after your knee surgery, if you just need to be able to get around your home and in and out of a wheelchair, that progression of exercise is going to look very different than someone that needs to get back to high level impact. And so I think just kind of having an appreciation that even though your tissue is healed at the 6 week mark, or your surgeon discharges you at the 6 week mark, that doesn't mean your tissue's ready for maximum loading right away, to like progressive loading, because otherwise if you overload, then you could end up with a problem, right?
Absolutely, especially for the women who has a abdominal surgeries, even though they're done usually through the small incisions, there is always a risk to develop like a small incisional hernia. So that's why be very careful. Don't lift anything heavy. And when you go back to regular activity, keep in mind, you're just being kind of inactive for about like a month,
yes,
6 weeks. And also your body had the stress of the surgery. So be kind to your body and just do it slow. And obviously you're going to feel sore and uncomfortable, but just take it easy.
Mm-hmm. I think we've done a great job of covering kind of what exactly, you know, prolapse is, conservative options, surgical options, or surgical considerations, I should say. Do you think that, you know, thinking on this bird's eye view here, anything we've missed that you want listeners to get out of this, you know, anyone that's listening, any care providers or potential patients, like anything else that you want them to get out of this that we haven't talked about?
Yes, I think one of the common questions that I get is, can I have sex if I have a pelvic organ prolapse? And the answer to it, yes, you can have sex, you can enjoy sex. And there's like, you know, it's very interesting. We keep talking about knees and orthopedic surgery, but you know that they actually, when people have like a hip replacement, they get this brochure and pamphlet of like what positions is okay to have sex. And when the first time I saw it, I thought like, it's brilliant. Why we don't give those brochures to women who has a pelvic organ prolapse? Because it's actually very important. And it's all about explaining that pelvic organ prolapse is hernia. Gravity is not your friend. So if you're having sex, don't pick a positions that will put you at bigger pressure of the gravity. So don't be upright. Anything with like elevated hips and pelvis, like pillows, so even a special wedge pillow, will help to keep the prolapse inside instead of outside. So it will definitely decrease the discomfort. And also, a lot of women concerned that they like partner will know, like, oh, I have a prolapse, should I tell them? I think it's like, it depends also the partner. Some partners, they are more involved, they want to know everything, and it makes them like mentally like more prepared. And some partners, they don't want to know, they don't have a clue. And if you're not going to really tell them, they're not going to actually like know what it is. So I think just reinforcing that and making sure that even if you have a prolapse, it doesn't mean that your life is over. It's just about adjusting your lifestyle. And if you're tired of adjusting your lifestyle or don't want to do that, we can always fix it. You like, nobody should suffer alone. It's way too common, and there's treatment available.
I appreciate your approach to that, because I think it's not a death sentence, and you don't have to have surgery, but surgery is not bad either. It doesn't mean that you failed, right? Yeah, there's options out there. It's not black and white.
Absolutely. I am
going to make sure in the show notes that I have your Instagram account, your website, ways that people can find you if they're in your area and they want to work with you. Anything else you want to share about yourself or about some of the work that you're doing that you want people to know about?
Well, my practices will be open probably by the time this podcast will be out. So I'm helping women with pelvic organ prolapse, incontinence, and sexual dysfunction and menopause. And I'm happy to help anyone who needs help, or if it's something that I don't do, I have a lot of amazing friends, doctor, who can also help. And just don't be silent. On my website, there is a page where you can reach me out at and send me email. And I'm happy to connect and help as much as I can.
That's great. And I also will share the links that you sent me that help provide visuals for what prolapse looks like, the different types of prolapse and repairs. So I appreciate that. I'll put that in the show notes. And other than that, I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your openness and your willingness to share information. And so thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap. If you enjoyed the show, can I ask you a big favor? Would you do one of three things for me? Number one, leave a review, because we could all use a little positive feedback sometimes. Number two, download the episodes, because it helps me see what people are interested in. Or number three, share it with somebody else, because sharing is caring. Catch you next time.